Zero at the Bone is the new crime novel by the Perth author David Wish Wilson, and it's a sequel to Line of Sight. It's set in 1979 in Perth at the height of the mining boom. A new gold deposit's been found in the desert, but the leading geologist on the project, Max Henderson, has mysteriously taken his own life. But why? Enter former cop and now private investigator Frank Swan, hired by Max Henderson's wife to investigate her husband's apparent suicide. What Swan digs up is a world of crooked cops and politicians, drug dealers, bent bookies, jewel thieves and dodgy entrepreneurs. David Wish Wilson tells Rhiannon Brown about the genesis of Zero at the Bone.
Well, it all began with my previous novel, which was called Line of Sight. I was working as a creative writing teacher at Casuarina Prison, which is Perth's maximum security facility. And I got to know, I taught poetry class there for about 3 years. And I got to know one of the prisoners there. And he introduced me to a story. It was his mother. It's probably, I found out subsequently, I remember it a little bit from when I was a child, but I found out subsequently it's probably Perth's most notorious unsolved murder. It was the murder of a brothel madam, Shirley Finn, in 1975. So my first novel, Line of Sight, kind of explored some of the terrain or some of the repercussions around that period. But in doing the research, lots of interviews with ex-policemen and prostitutes from the time, I discovered an enormous amount of material and a lot of stories that I couldn't quite fit into that book. So I wanted to revisit it. There aren't a lot of novels set in Perth, full stop, and certainly not from that period. So I decided to stay with my main character, Frank Swan, and move it forward a few years. So it's 1979. It's the sesquicentenary of colonisation of Perth. So there's a lot of celebration going on in the streets. But the novel really started for me with a quote that my brother gave me by a Spanish conquistador, Hernan Cortes, which I quote in Zero at the Bone. And he said that I and my men suffer from a disease of the heart that can only be cured by gold. So I had a bit of a closer look at 1979. It's quite an interesting period in Perth's cultural history because it was a time when policing methods were still quite old school. And I remember from a child that seemed like there was a bank robbery every second day. So it was kind of the glory days for bank robbers. But it was also a time when organised crime was moving away from the kind of prohibition economies of gaming and vice and into the kind of the drug market. And there was so much money being made there for some of these people that they decided to go respectable and set up legitimate businesses. So I thought, going on from that quote, the Hernan Cortes quote, that incredible desire for gold, I thought, what would happen if I put four or five kind of organised crime figures and a couple of dodgy coppers in a room? They want to become respectable, they want to create a legitimate business, but of course the methods for achieving their ends are still criminal. And then I wanted to throw my main character, Frank Swan, into the mix and see how he responded.
So they've all got a finger in the pie of a gold stake. I think it's the Rosa Gold Company, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
So tell us about what they've found, the gold deposit they think they've found in the desert, and what plans they've got for it.
Well, these jokers got together, and another thing that characterises Perth of that particular period is was just on the cusp of the kind of the cowboy capitalism we associate in WA with the WA Inc. period when big business got in bed with government. Just on the cusp of that. So these guys, there's a lot of punting on the stock market by ordinary people. And so there are a lot of opportunities for, I suppose, what I call hustlers in business suits who are descended upon Perth in the 80s in particular. They thought their initial idea was to just do, the pump and dump or the ramp kind of scams where you create a false company, you put out a bit of false data, you hire a dodgy geologist to spruik it, you have kind of compliant stock market people to spread the word, the price goes up, you sell high, and you make a lot of money, there's actually nothing in the ground. What these guys have discovered, to their dismay and their joy, I suppose, is that this looks like being a real, genuine gold mine, with an enormous quantity of gold beneath the ground. And so they're all in a panic and they're starting to, put a lot of their own money into it, which is where it starts to get interesting for a crime writer as well, because, like I say, their methods are basically criminal, but they're starting to see the opportunity to make legitimate money and the kind of the good that will do to their reputations in the business world. So there's a lot for them at stake as well, rather than just the usual kind of money-making deals that they go through with.
So the novel opens with Max Henderson, who's a top geologist. He's involved in this goldfield claim, but the novel opens with him taking his own life. What's his background? Because, in fact, he isn't the first in his family to have an interest in gold.
That's right. Gold mining is really quite central to the history of Perth. Perth was a small town, I suppose, of about 48,000 people in 1890, and the first gold rush happened in 1892, and suddenly, you know, 750,000 people cycled through Perth. So Perth's story is based very, very strongly on gold. So a lot of people arrived from the eastern states where there was a depression on, moved out to the goldfields and tried to make their money. And so most people from Perth who have been here, you know, longer than a few generations will have some kind of family member who is from towns like Kalgoorlie or lived out in Kalgoorlie or made money out there, made money in the service industries that sprung up around that. So Max Henderson's father is a case in point. Max Henderson, who's a geologist, was brought up in the goldfields in a particularly beautiful part of Western Australia, around the Kew. There's a couple of big gold mines out there, Big Bell and the Day Dawn mine. He grew up out there, and so his father was involved with exploring for gold, but always struggled, never really struck the big one. So Max Henderson's gone on to become a Vietnam War chopper pilot. He's come back to Australia. He's gotten his geology degree, and he's gone out into the kind of the broader world. I put him down as one of the geologists responsible for discovering the Ok-Tedi mine in PNG. He's come back to Perth. He's made his fortune. He's got his reputation is established, but he's retired, and suddenly he's drawn back into this Rosa Gold mining stake. And like you say, the novel begins with his suicide, and I suppose that's the central or the generative mystery behind it. Why did he take his own life? And what are the repercussions of that act, particularly for his partner? So my protagonist, Frank Swan, starts his investigation by being hired by Max Henderson's wife to look into the reasons behind his suicide. She suspects it was something a little bit more than that.
And she's also inherited her husband's share in the mine. So she's not necessarily all she seems as well.
That's right, and that's something that Frank Swan starts off discovering. I mean, she's an intriguing character to him, but his initial response when he finds out who is involved with Rosa Gold, these are, you know, serious people, and representative, I think, of some of the characters involved in business in Perth at the time, can see that she's perhaps a little, or he senses that she's a little bit out of her depth. So he's first instinct is to just walk away from the whole thing, but he can see that she's serious about maintaining her husband's stake in the company, and so he sticks around a little bit longer to try and help her out, or basically to talk her out of continuing with this gold mining operation.
How much is the corruption that you describe in the novel? I mean, this is fiction, but, you know, there's... Like you said, there are coppers, there are judges, politicians, criminals. They're all in it together. How exaggerated is this, or would you say it's fairly true to what it was like?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say it's fairly true to what it was like. I mean, obviously, I'm emphasising certain aspects of Perth culture in the period, but I wanted to contrast it. Perth, for a lot of people, is probably not the kind of place you'd think of as being a good place to write crime fiction, because it doesn't have that kind of brooding Gotham City light and what have you. It's got a, you know, beautiful climate and beautiful beaches and the river and all of that kind of thing. But it's more, I suppose, I was intrigued by something that West Australian writer Dorothy Hewitt said in 1982, I think. She said that, Perth's air of, you know, the culture of leisure around the place and its sense of manufactured innocence is actually the perfect field for corruption. So I kind of look at that, I take the kind of the Mediterranean light that Perth has, that kind of, and I suppose, rather than kind of a Gotham City or a Scandinavian crime fiction vibe, I tend to look more towards a place like Los Angeles, where there's that, that old saying, the brighter the light, the deeper the shadow. But I think it's certainly representative of the period. There are a lot of kind of organised crime figures getting into legitimate business. Some of them went on to become quite successful and others less so.
Frank Swan, who's the private investigator, a former superintendent in the Western Australian Police Force. He's a really good guy, but even he sometimes can't do the honest thing. You know, everyone's compromised in this sort of situation.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a staple of crime fiction. You take your central character. I mean, Frank Swan is basically a good man. He's a family man. He thinks of himself as a good person. He has a moral code. You know, he's an ex-policeman. He's prepared to bend the law when he needs to. But as a staple of crime fiction, you put your protagonist in a situation of danger and see how he or she operates in that particular circumstance. But he's a man who is accustomed to, as an ex-policeman, is accustomed to using violence because, like I say, policing culture in Western Australia during that period was still quite old school. At the same time, what separates him from his kind of enemies, I suppose, is to kind of paraphrase something American writer James Lee Burke said, he understands that violence is something that degrades everybody involved in it, and most particularly himself. So he only uses violence when his own life is in danger or the lives of people he cares about.
What about back to the research in the novel? Did you go back to old files, newspaper clippings to help build a picture of not only the city of Perth at that time, which is so vividly drawn, you know, from cars to music, for the footy clubs, the pubs, all of that, but also details of what was going on in business at that time?
Well, I was still quite young in 1979, but I suppose on the one hand, yeah, I wanted to contrast or those certain kind of negative aspects of Perth culture at the time or emphasise them and set them up against some of the things that I love about Perth, you know, the climate, the like, as you say, the footy clubs and the pubs, particularly Fremantle, where a lot of the novel is set. It's always been a town kind of crammed with characters, got a really rich kind of street life. So I wanted to emphasise those kinds of things as well. So it was based on a lot of interviews with ex-policemen from the time. And I've got another book coming out later in the year. It's the Perth book in the New South Books City series. So I also had a lot of research already done about some of the things going on in, particularly around town planning in central Perth and the history of Perth as a city itself. So I was able to utilise both of those things, the research I'd done for my first crime novel and the research that I was already doing for the forthcoming Perth book as well.
David Wish-Wilson speaking there to Rhiannon Brown, and his latest crime novel featuring the former cop, now private investigator, Frank Swan, is called Zero at the Bone, and it's a Viking book. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN. Daniel Browning with you.